Music of American composer Jennifer Higdon. You are listening to her composition On the Death of the Righteous. The Mendelssohn Club of Philadelphia was joined by the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. Alan Harler, my guest, was the conductor. Music of Jennifer Higdon. Good morning. The time is a minute after 11 on Wednesday, October 3rd, and you are tuned to WPRB, Princeton, New Jersey. Community-supported independent radio at 103.3 FM or online around the world at www.wprb.com. Welcome to another edition of Classical Discoveries. I am your host, Marvin Rosen, and I'm with you every Wednesday from 5:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. Today we are having two guests up until 1 p.m. I am being joined by American composer Robert Moran and artistic director of the Mendelssohn Club of Philadelphia, Alan Harler. Both are here, and we are having, I have to say, lots of fun.
At my expense, I may add.
Well, I mean,
because every time you turn off the mics, I mean, you throw Bruckner in my face.
Well, I mean, that's your favorite composer. You see that? And Alan is here just kind of laughing at it because he chose the, you know.
He's laughing in fear.
And well, because you never know what might happen on the 21st. Actually, we are... Tell us a little bit about the concert, Alan, about the concert that's coming up on the 21st.
The Moran, Bruckner Moran, so it's a Bruckner sandwich. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And we haven't talked much about the Angele Dei Bobs that it was that will be premiering. That piece actually... is more like the Requiem Chantecine in that it's in my mind it's a palette of different colors of sound mm-hmm. that come from different places in the cathedral. The choir is divided into two choirs of 70, and they're spread as far apart in the front as they can possibly be. And the organ, of course, is in the loft in the rear. This piece uses both the instrumentation of the Trinity Requiem, that is the four cellos and harp, but also uses the 15 winds and brass for the Bruckner E minor Mass. So we have these families or colors coming from brass, coming from the four celli, coming from woodwinds, and though the music is sort of dropped into the space and then travels through the space with this 7 or 8 minute reverberation. And probably the best seat in the house for that piece is right in the very center, so that it's all you're getting all of the overlapping sounds. What would you say about the Angele Dei?
Nothing.
Robert, when did you finish this? Is this a brand new?
Yeah. I don't know. It really comes out of the last big choral piece I did, which was for Germany this past year, the Buddha Goes to Bayreuth.
Oh yes, I've heard a little of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was in
Heaven. What a sound that was.
In the Gasometer, which is there in Oberhausen, which is. Almost 20 seconds decay, sound decay. Two large choruses separated and two string orchestras. And that was, to get sound to evaporate before you put the next sound in is quite some duration of time. So that was in my head, and I thought, well, we're going to be back in the Basilica, and it'd be wonderful to do a sound piece, a landscape that sort of pulls together into the Bruckner, and then Alan suggested that I write an organ interlude from the end of my piece into the Bruckner. So tonality wise, it takes it right in, and that gives us time to get the two choruses back into position for the Bruckner.
And so it'll be continuous.
Yeah, it's continuous.
Also, when I talked about the instrumentation, I left out the glass harmonica.
Oh,
just
yeah.
a wonderful, wonderful sound. Yeah. There is one moment when all of the sound stops, and out of that comes just four notes from the glass harmonica.
And it's so appropriate to have a glass harmonica in Philadelphia, Benjamin Franklin.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And the first time we ever did anything together was Mozart. And of course, he wrote all that incredible glass harmonica.
Yeah.
Music.
So, wow.
So, Well, we just hope that the glass harmonica behaves itself, because like someone may drink the wine out of the glasses before they get around to playing
and change the pitch.
We may be.
I might be the first one to do that.
No. Oh, we'll remember that.
Yeah. Well, Robert, you know, we got to go now to some of your early music, because you know, I think people associate you so much with some of this incredibly ethereal, gorgeous choral music. And I mean, you think of Trinity Requiem, you think of another piece, I'm thinking Seven Sounds Unseen. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are such unbelievably ethereal, gorgeous works. But people don't know that early in your career, you wrote like what they call, I've seen referred to as performance art spectaculars. Now, I am thinking, for example, of a piece titled 39 Minutes for 39 Autos, uh-huh. a composition which used 100,000 performers and most of downtown San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about some of these works.
Well, that's another two-hour show. But
well,
I mean,
let's do it.
No.
But tell us, how did, I mean, this
well,
is...
Well, no, I mean, it was like, you know, it was rock and roll time. And
yeah,
they wanted
sure.
They wanted something spectacular and a big rock festival, and which inevitably didn't happen, but it was going to start out with a piece of mine. And so we decided to use Twin Peaks, and then we added, you know, radio stations and television stations. And so I was very skeptical of the whole thing, because I thought, oh, this is going to be a nightmare. You know, we've got the police, and we've got traffic, and we've got all this. And it was amazing, absolutely amazing.
I think we heard some of that piece on the Princeton Pike. On the way up here today.
What happened?
Every time they honk their horn, I want some copyright material and money.
What was the matter? Was this where the traffic was?
The traffic, yeah.
You know, they're doing such crazy, wild things in Princeton. You know, they're closing jug handles on Route 1. And based on that thought, Robert has to get a glass of water, you
yeah,
see.
Absolutely.
So, but, I mean, you hear some
hear
of these
the car
sounds.
Horn piece, almost any time you're driving.
Absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely.
Wow.
But, so, I mean, I want... Did I send you the link on YouTube?
There was like a bag or these...
The paper bag opera in London.
Yes, you sent me that.
Good. Have you seen that album?
No.
Well, back in 1971, I was in London with friends of mine who were like... they were the directors of archaeology at BBC Television. And they mm-hmm. introduced me to a director there who was a totally insane gentleman from Australia. And he was just spending vast amounts of money at BBC Television on shows on Sati and what have you.
Yeah.
He said, what would you like to do? He said, I've heard about a piece of yours that has never been done, and it's a paper called the Paper Bag Opera, which takes place in any major city financial district at lunchtime. And you have people in full-size paper bag, lunch bags, you know, the American lunch bag. And you've got, and each one inside, they can't talk, but they have children's toy sounds. So you hear sirens, whatever. So should we do it? Would you like to do it? And I said, I would, sure. And he said, well, we got BBC Television, we've got the camera crews, we've got all these people. Here we had curators, we had the head of archaeology, we had the head of, in paper bags. They were all in paper bags.
And they didn't say bag it. They
no,
really
they didn't
did
say
it.
Bag
no,
it. It was lunchtime. They couldn't talk. So, of course, excuse me, they were out in the behind the Bank of London.
Wow. Yeah, I saw
them. Where all the big deals happen at lunchtime, not in the bank. But and not at lunch, fancy restaurants. They happen in the tail coats, the long, you know, coat and all this, in this back alleyway. It's not alley, a little small street at the back of the Bank of London. And here they had to deal with groups of bags that were walking around them and baby bags and whatever.
Yeah, it's quite a vision.
You know, here's the BBC camera crews having a great time because they're out Throgmorton Square and all over, and these bags were running loose. And so then what happened
quite
was...
Quite a difference from Trinity Requiem.
Right. Yeah, it's a little bit different, but it's still, yeah. So that's what happened, and they got it, and they presented this as a television show. But then the interesting thing was that after that, the gentleman, the director, took the film. It was filmed. This is pre-video.
Mm.
And went back with his wife and girlfriend to to Australia, and I never saw the show. It was never shown in the USA, so I never saw it. About a year ago, my friends in London said, you never saw that? Well, we've got a DVD. We've got a DVD of the BBC show. And I said, I'd love to see it, since it's like, this was 1971. And this is going to be a brand new return to Bagdville, right? And so then other friends said, we'll put it on YouTube. So it's available on YouTube. You've got to see it, Alan. It's quite wonderful. Because you see 1971 London with the long hair on the young executives and the mini skirts. And it's really very funny. Yeah, but that was fun because, see, I wanted to do opera at that time, but the opera companies were not interested in anything contemporary in late 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. That came a little bit later when it became sort of modish to do contemporary opera.
Wasn't there a piece for dogs?
Yeah, Make Room for Daddy. It was for 11 dogs, yeah. And then the popcorn piece was originally came out with Charlotte because she was my dog who loved popcorn, and I'd take the top off the popcorn thing, and it'd fly through the air, and she'd leap and grab these things. And so that became a ballet. well, it seems reasonable to me.
We're going to listen now to one of your early pieces. Now, you co-founded the San Francisco New Music Ensemble in the mid-1960s with Howard Hirsch. And we're going to hear a very, I guess, rare LP, something that never came on CD. What's the piece?
It's called Afternoon of Dracula.
Afternoon of Dracula. Yeah. Tell us about it now.
It's a graphic score, non-traditional, and what you're going to hear is the Afternoon of Dracula. And it's for about 12 instruments, all traditional instruments, but you'll swear it's electronics.
Interesting. When was this written? About 1971 or 72?
Earlier than that, I think.
Yeah. Well, this is Early Music by Robert Moran, and I do hope
And it is not it. Electronic.
And it's not electronic. This is going to be fun. I hope you all enjoy it. Music by my guest, Robert Moran.
Thank you.
Just listening to The Afternoon of Dracula by my guest Robert Moran, as performed by the San Francisco Conservatory New Music Ensemble, conducted by the composer. Now, Robert, for people who turned in when that was on, what would you like to kind of, I guess, because none of this was electronic.
No, there's no electronics, and nothing is amplified.
Wow.
There's no, you know, contact mics or anything like that. So,
quite amazing. Quite amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank
quite
you.
Amazing. It almost, maybe we ought to listen to it again. I'll put it on next week. You know, I mean, but it was, but I mean, very, you know, I mean, sound, it kind of goes back to some of these things, almost like Cage, you know.
Robert, what electronic music had you heard at that time?
I mean, yeah.
Well, no, I don't know. I mean, I heard it because we had 3-2-1 Divisadero, uh-huh. And Pauline was there,
yeah.
And Ramon Sender was there, and Morton Sabotnik at 3-2-1 Divisadero.
Yeah.
And we heard, you know, the newest things from the, you know, the studios would send, you know, the Stockhaus and stuff and what have you. And then there were a lot of stuff that was just percolating there. But I think they were all such boring concerts, having to sit there and listen to loudspeakers, that's why people said, well, why don't we add some lights, or maybe add a few dancers, or maybe add some theater. And that's what happened with these multiple theater things, the early, mid-60s. So I could see that the Afternoon of Dracula could very easily be, you know, a visual.
Yeah. Definitely, definitely.
We do it out in a cemetery.
There is an early Pauline Oliveris choral piece too.
Yes,
that
I know.
Sounds
that.
Very much.
Does it?
Well, it sounds like electronic sound.
Because I had never heard that piece until you did it at that Baptist church in 1980s.
Right. Yeah.
I think it was 85, 90. Because I just met you and you said, "Oh, come to this concert. It's down there around what is a bad Baptist church around 5th or 6th off of Locust."
On Sansom Street.
And you did
that
Pauline's piece there.
Yeah. And that's of course a vocal a cappella piece, but it also is very electronic sound.
It uses
pre-electronic. I mean, that's why I wondered how much electronic music you had heard.
Well,
when you
nothing influenced me, but what did influence me was the Penderecki Hiroshima piece for the strings.
Yeah, sure.
Because when that came out, we just listened to it and said, who needs an electronic studio? I mean, this is amazing piece.
And I personally feel, as I say to my classes, I think if you have to pick maybe one of the masterworks from that post-World War II, that is definitely it.
The
Penderecki.
The Trinity.
Quite. I remember, you know, hearing that work for the very first time, and you can see how the times have changed. I was a student, and believe it or not, I heard that piece for the very first time on commercial radio during dinner hour.
Really?
I remember it was like 10 to 7 in the evening, and all of a sudden, it was like, oh my gosh. And I'll never
forget
it.
That sounds like a precursor of classical discoveries.
Yes, well, it was. I mean, maybe just a cursor. I don't know about but I remember it, and I remember the terrifying quality of the work. And when I got the recording of it, and listening to it for the first time, because of the, I guess, the power of it and the almost fear of the sounds coming out of it, I remember putting the volume all the way to zero and slowly bringing it up. I remember that like yesterday. Mm-hmm. Quite an amazing piece.
Quite amazing, isn't it?
It certainly is. Well, Robert, we're going to go now to another one of your amazing pieces because I love this. And Alan, we'll get back to you and discuss the concert a little bit more in just a little bit. We're going to listen now to Robert Moran's Open Veins for amplified violin and variable chamber ensemble. Tell us a little bit about
this. I love amplified strings.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't use them very much, but I love the amplified violin because there's nothing like an amplified pizzicato. Mm-hmm. When it's really loud, it just knocks you out of your chair.
Right. Yeah, tell us about the... Oh, are you okay?
Yes, I'm just joking. I'm just joking on a pizzicato.
I think he was thinking about Bruckner. Again, you need water? Sure.
I need some water after that remark.
But tell us a little more about the piece before we hear it.
Someone's flashing at
us. I know. I'll get it in just
a
bit.
Okay. Open Veins, Petronius, who wrote Satyricon.
Right.
And, you know, he was involved in politics, and Nero said, I think it's a good idea if you check out. And so he cut his wrists, but he threw a party in advance. And, I mean, he cut his wrists and then had the party. And then everyone went away, and he died. And I thought, well, let's have some party music. So I thought that's how I wrote Open Veins. Yeah. And so we put this recording. It's just incredible.
We did it in London
with that incredible piano circus. And Alexander Balinescu, who's the violinist, and a crazy man, which it takes to... You know.
And this work is like a little bit later than, like in the mid-80s, I think, something around that?
Yeah, I think so.
But we listen now to Open Veins by my guest, Robert Moran.
Thank you.
Music by one of my guests, Robert Moran. You were listening to his Open Veins. Our amplified violinist, Alexander Balinescu, was joined by the Piano Circus Band. We're going to hear a complete performance now of a work of Andrea Clearfield. Alan, why don't you take it over? What are we going to be listening to, and tell us a little bit about the work?
This was our first commission, first piece that we commissioned from Andrea Clearfield. It is based on the Golem story, the Golem of Prague. And I went to Andrea to ask her about a piece to be programmed with the Bloch Sacred Service. And so I wanted something with a Jewish theme. And we arrived at the Golem story. Mm-hmm. And that was the resulting cantata for a large orchestra, large chorus, baritone soloist. And then it was subsequently recorded on the Metamorphosis recording with the Higdon piece that we heard earlier.
Right.
Later commissioned, actually just last year, we commissioned another piece, the Tsegola, from mm-hmm. Andrea. The Golem Psalms has been quite successful and has had many, many performances around the country.
Well, that's great. Yeah. And we're going to hear this music now. We listened to the Golem Psalms. Did you want to say something? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. The Golem Psalms by Andrea Clearfield. The baritone is Sanford Sylvan, and joined by the Mendelssohn Club of Philadelphia and the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia. My guest, Alan Harler, is the conductor. Music of Andrea Clearfield.
My name is Joseph the Golem. But what does that tell you, except that I am raw potential waiting to be shaped by need? What does that tell you, except that I am mute, unless others speak for me, unless I am the shofar for my Creator's breath? What does that reveal, except that I came into being by magic and was kept secret by those who conjure under threat of death? Am I so different from you, shaped by the circumstances of your birth, subject to the whims of power, the burdens of history? Am I so different, invisible, but for an act of grace, doomed to wait for redemption beneath a shroud of prayers?
Beginning was chaos and form and mute, water and wind and air and creation. Rabbi Judah, rest me from the mud of the moldah, and circling seven times, bring me to my skin of mud glowed red with blood. My lungs drew air, I sprouted head. Yet still I was but cold dead clay, until my master etched upon my brow.
Thank you. rest.